Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today on Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, I'm here once again with David Jacobson, Marketing Communications Manager for the Positive Coaching Alliance, which just launched a national conversation on coaching. I'm also here with my brother, mental game coach, Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, David. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Lisa. Hello, Patrick. Great to be back with you.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, David.
Great to have you back. Well, why don't you begin by telling me a little bit about the National Conversation on Coaching and what prompted it?
Sure. Ultimately, Positive Coaching Alliance is out to change minds in the youth sports and high school sports world about what constitutes quality coaching and what constitutes an optimal youth or high school sports environment. One of the ways to change minds is through conversation. People who respect each other and talk civilly and debate points civilly can get a great deal done in terms of correcting ills in our society, or to look at it more positively, can get a lot done in terms of creating an optimal situation for the people involved. So the really simple central notion here is we want to get people talking about what constitutes good coaching and a positive youth sports experience.
And now tell me how you're doing it. It looks like you've got a number of forums for getting that conversation going.
Absolutely. We've certainly done a lot of work on our own website to position it as a hub for that conversation. Of course, some virtual conversation in terms of people blogging and commenting on each other's blog entries in response to different issues that we raise. Sometimes it's based in the world of pro sports and how that reflects on the world of youth or high school sports and what messages children and coaches and parents may take. This is ultimately a parent-facing communications strategy on our part because we feel that parents are the ultimate arbiters of what experience they will demand and create for their children. In addition to the online component, of course, we're trying to do some media relations, and we're trying to build as many different elements of actual conversation, such as this one, into our website and spread that communication through a number of partners and appropriate media outlets.
I see. And you have opportunities for both kids and parents to tell their stories and respond. I assume coaches, too.
Absolutely. Anybody involved in youth sports certainly has a place in this conversation. Because of the nature of our organization and what we're trying to get done with the adults around youth sports primarily, we don't have a specific focus on inviting children into this conversation, although, of course, they're welcome, and perhaps they and their parents together can sit down and read some of the blog entries and comments and then craft their own in response.
Now, I'm curious, is the feedback you're getting from parents, coaches, and kids providing any surprises?
Of course. We're always surprised by some of the thought processes out there. I think what's most surprising is the variety of comments that we get. For example, we just started, as part of National Conversation, an initiative that involves eight other national organizations, including U.S. Lacrosse and AYSO and Little League and a number of other organizations, Institute for International Sport and the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports, that help us distribute what we call good coaching case studies. These are fictitious scenarios, hypothetical situations that leave plenty of gray area for discussion. We create a file, a PDF, that each of the organizations can post on its website and then distribute links to that from their email newsletters or other portions of their websites so that Little League, for example, can reach out to its audience and ask its audience for thoughts on the scenario written into the case study. And then we direct some of that traffic from the file of the scenario back to our own website. And we've generated several dozen really terrific, well-thought-out blog comments that you can see on our website now just in the couple weeks since we've launched this initiative.
I'm curious. Now, what are people saying about the coach who yells? I'll quickly summarize because we certainly – I've seen this a lot in my career as a sports mom. You've got the coach who yells at his kids and who always wins, and the kids seem to be okay with it. And nobody really complains. And is he a good coach or a bad coach? What kind of feedback have you gotten?
The feedback, like I said, has been really wide-ranging. Most people don't think yelling is the greatest way to get one's point across, but I'd say that the bulk of the answers that we've received so far verge on if the coach needs to yell to be heard, if the coach is yelling supportive comments, that's okay, or there's more tolerance for that anyway. But they draw the line at humiliation and at singling out players and at making public what should be private conversations, essentially.
Uh-huh. So even though the kids seem happy on this team, on this fictional team, the parents are saying he shouldn't yell negative, critical things at them.
That's correct. And, you know, one of the things that we are up against in terms of creating a positive character-building environment and an environment where youth sports is viewed as part of the educational process, we're up against a win-at-all-cost mentality. And coaches who yell may also bring that mentality. And if they're winning, people don't mind it so much because there is the cultural norm in the U.S. that winning really counts for a lot more than education in sports. So, you know, there is greater tolerance for a winning coach who yells than for a losing coach who yells.
You know, I also think, David, that there's a tolerance from parents if it's the only coach in town or if it's the best coach in town, they'll tolerate some of that yelling or negative coaching tactics from that coach because they feel like they're put in a position where they have to stick with that particular coach.
I agree with that, Patrick, and it's so often the case that parents don't feel that they have a choice or that they really just have to accept the hand they're dealt, and that's not true. That's one of the things that is really driving our organization in achieving its mission of certifying double goal coaches, coaches who still want to win, yes, but who understand that their more important role is teaching life lessons through sports. So we are trying to create an environment where parents, frankly, demand better for their children. And certainly parents shop around for schools. Parents shop around for music lessons or what have you. There's no reason that they can't shop around for the best youth sports experience and get involved, since these are largely grassroots volunteer organizations, get involved to make the environment that you want for your child just the same as you would joining the PTA or what have you.
Now, David, don't you find, though, that the kids, their main goal is usually to be with their friends? So it's kind of, parents might tell you that it's hard to get the kids to look at a different team?
There is that concern, and, of course, you would need to balance the child's need for friendship, because that is part of the fun and that is part of the educational experience. It is part of the pulling together of a team that will benefit that child in later life. So I'm not saying that the coaching technique is the only determinant of what organization or what team you'd want to be on. You do have to consider all the other aspects of what's going to make for the best experience for your child.
Right. I think it's a tough choice. when your child wants to be on a certain team that you're not crazy about just because they want to be with their friends. I don't think it's a real easy choice to make.
No, and as parents, we all know it's difficult to say no, but sometimes
right.
it is the best thing to do.
Right. Now, tell me, what else are you learning from your coaching case studies?
Well, we're learning that there's a great amount of concern out there, and that there's some really articulate and thoughtful people who are involved in our world of youth sports. That's what always amazes me, because to make the effort to come to our blog and to read through some of the responses and to then create your own response, not that this is Nobel Prize winning stuff, but certainly a lot more thought than you might expect is shared at this website.
It's interesting. Now, I'd love to talk a little bit about a case study that's cited in your blog right now, and it's about the Central Washington college softball player who carried her injured opponent around the bases so that the opposing team would win. Basically, they were vying for a championship, as I understand it. It was a girls' team, and one of the players hit a home run and then somehow got hurt, and her opponent picked her up and carried her around the bases so her team would win. Now, this was very big news here in the Northwest, and I'm curious about your view of this event.
Well, it was certainly national news. ESPN covered it a great deal and actually did a very nice piece on it that appeared on air, and you can still see that, I believe, on their website and, of course, on YouTube. We got a deluge of emails at Positive Coaching Alliance from people all over the country talking about what a great example this team set. What a great example of a double goal coach the coach was, whose players, he had cultivated such character in his players that they would go to such an extreme measure of carrying their opponent around the bases to essentially give the team an extra run that that they didn't have to yield to their opponent. But they did the right thing, and you know, it made huge news all over the place. The people in our sphere certainly responded warmly to it and just thought it was terrific and a real ray of hope in what can sometimes be a pretty dim sports world out there.
Now, I have to follow up with the question we discussed earlier, and that is, would this have happened on a men's team?
No telling. In my heart of hearts, I'm not sure that I would have done the same thing.
Because they were vying for the championship.
Right.
Patrick, do you have an opinion about this?
Well, typically I think, you know, there's the stereotype that women athletes or girl athletes have that more caring nature. And so from that perspective, you would think that, yeah, but I can also see, you know, girls' teams can be just as competitive, too, as the men's teams. So to me, it comes down to more of the individual and the individuals, the two individuals that did that, rather than maybe drawing any, you know, stereotypical assessments about whether it would be a girls' thing or a boys' thing to do that.
Well, but it had to have been a reflection on the coach. I agree with David. Because certain coaches would have been very angry at the woman who decided to let the other team win. I mean, she must have had the backing of her coach in some way, I assume.
Well, I would like to take this back to what we were just talking about before in terms of parents having a choice. You can seek out a coach who builds character. A coach who builds character will have that reputation in your community or, if necessary, the next community over or two communities over. You can go find the right coach for your child.
Now, how would you go about doing that? Because I think it's hard for parents to know how to do that.
Right. Well, we would like to have it be more and more the case that people are specifically asking, are your coaches double goal coaches? Are they certified by Positive Coaching Alliance? That's not the only solution out there, of course. There are plenty of wonderful coaches who don't know who Positive Coaching Alliance is yet. But that's one of the ways that you can go about shopping around for a good coach. And if you run into a youth sports organization especially in a major city in the U.S. that has never heard of Positive Coaching Alliance, that is not a great sign.
Well, now, can you – it's funny. Since we first interviewed you, I've run into a lot of these coaches in Portland, but I had no idea they existed. Can I go to your website to find them and just say, you know, Portland, Oregon, who are these coaches? Is there one place where you could look for them?
We don't have a registry of the coaches themselves, but we do have, if you go to our website, positivecoach.org, and click on the offices and locations link at the very top of the homepage, there's a description of each region where PCA is present, of the activities in that region and contacts in that region, and then there's a link at the bottom of each individual location page that lists all the different organizations with which we're partnered in that geographic area.
Okay,
Portland does not have a PCA office, but there are a few organizations that we've partnered with there. There's a link called Other Regions that would address all the different youth sports organizations throughout the country with which we've partnered that are not necessarily in a geographic area where we're physically present.
Right. That's helpful. That's a good way to start.
I would encourage anybody out there, certainly, to visit our website and look at the location pages to identify youth sports organizations that promise your children a more educational and character-building experience.
Now, I want to get back to your website for a second. You have a section called My Youth Sports Story. What kind of stories are people submitting? Are they horror stories? Are they happy ones? And do they come from kids? Do they come from adults?
The stories almost exclusively come from adults, and they are some horror stories and some happy stories and some both. I guess the very nature of story is that there would be a conflict and a resolution. Fortunately, most of the stories that we've been receiving have a happy resolution. But there is also a lot of conflict. People really do have some hurdles to get over in terms of combating the win-at-all-cost mentality that is so prevalent in our country. So what I'm seeing is a lot of 40-somethings and 50-somethings who really just accepted what was handed to them in the way of coaching, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and have had to overcome that in their own biases and their own understanding of what constituted good coaching so that they themselves could become better, more positive coaches and better, more supportive sports parents.
That's interesting. And you find that the younger parents come to sports with a different viewpoint?
I do. I think that the old school coach and the more, say, militaristic models of coaching and leadership just are not as accepted and as embraced for people who grew up in the 80s and 90s as for people who grew up earlier.
And the people who grew up earlier probably had that kind of coaching is what
right.
You're saying.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
That's interesting. I have to see if I notice that on the different sports teams I take part in because, of course, the parents are all ages. That's interesting.
And to keep in mind that that's a generalization that I'm making. Certainly there are unenlightened 25- and 35-year-olds, and there are very enlightened 50- and 60-year-olds. I just think that the environment of what constituted leadership is, or the definition of what constitutes leadership has changed over the last 30, 40 years.
Right. Although the people who are in their 40s and 50s now had a completely different sports experience in that it was less structured. So in some ways, things have really, really changed.
Absolutely. We don't get this much on our blog or in response to our case studies, and maybe you've raised one that we could incorporate into a case study, but there is a general decrying of the lack of unstructured playtime in our world now. And I am just old enough to have had a great deal of unstructured playtime and really understand the benefits of that and try to incorporate it into my own children's lives as much as they are participating in organized youth sports. they also do find themselves in pickup games in the park and things like that.
Yeah, that's so important. Now, in our family with five kids who are 7 years apart, we had plenty of time to have unstructured playtime at our own house. But the families aren't as big as ours were anymore. And that may be part of it, too. You know, if you don't have a million brothers and sisters who are your age, you have to go somewhere.
Sure. There's so much that is part of it. You know, just the ever-increasing suburbanization and urban sprawl and scare stories in the media and just the feeling that, you know, parents need to be with their kids in all their activities and that parents need to manage the environment and everything that their kids do.
Right. No, I think that's true. And that really has a huge effect on sports and school and everything else. Well, David, I really appreciate you joining us for a third time here, and I'm sure we'll find a reason to have you back again.
It's my pleasure, Lisa and Patrick. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Thanks a lot, David.
Be sure to visit youthsportspsychology.com to get our new workbook CD program, The Ultimate Sports Parent. You can also pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes. That's youthsportspsychology.com.